This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 218 to 219 from the chapter Al-Baqarah from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parhizkar.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Inna allatheena amanu wallatheena hajaru wajahadu fi sabilillah. Inna allatheena amanu wallatheena hajaru wajahadu fi sabilillahi ulaika yarjuna rahmatallah. أولئك يرجون رحمة الله والله غفور رحيم. يسألونك عن الخمر والميسر قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس وإثمهما أكبر من نفعهما ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو وكذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Surely those who believed and those who fled their home and strove hard in the way of Allah, these hope for the mercy of Allah, and Allah is forgiving, merciful. They ask you about intoxicants and games of chance. Say, in both of them there is a great sin and means of profit for men. And their sin is greater than their profit. And they ask you as to what they should spend. Say, what you can spare. Thus does Allah make clear to you the communications that you may ponder.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. President Raisi says Iran increases level of uranium enrichment only after European states violated their commitments under the 2015 deal. Iraq says the country will restrict all of its internal transactions to Iraqi dinars as of next year, ditching the U.S. dollar. Also coming up, Niger's military rulers welcome as a historic moment France's decision to withdraw its ambassador and troops from the country. Thanks for joining us. The Iranian president has categorically rejected accusations that the country's move to enrich uranium at the 60% purity level was aimed at building an atomic bomb. In an interview with CNN, Ebrahim Raisi said that Tehran ramped up enrichment only after European countries, quote, trampled upon their commitments under the 2015 nuclear deal. He said if the European signatories return to the deal and fulfill their obligations at any time, Iran will undoubtedly comply with its commitments as it has done in the past. Elsewhere in the interview, the president said U.S. mediated efforts to normalize Israel's relations with some Persian Gulf Arab states, including Saudi Arabia, will fail. This comes as Riyadh has reportedly informed Washington of its decision to suspend all negotiations on normalizing ties with Israel. There have been lots of speculations about the possibility of Israel and Saudi Arabia reconciling these days, from the Saudis abandoning talks with Israel to both Israel and Saudi Arabia sounding optimistic about a possible reconciliation. One viewpoint holds true across the spectrum. Any reconciliation with the Zionist regime is a stab in the back of Palestinians.
But I believe that we are at the cusp of an even more dramatic breakthrough, an historic peace between Israel and Saudi Arabia.
The Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu on Israel-Saudi normalization. And here he is again.
I think that under your leadership, Mr. President, we can forge a historic peace between Israel and Saudi Arabia.
The Saudi Crown Prince seems to echo the same sentiment.
Every day we get closer. It seems it's, for the first time, a real one, serious. We're going to see how it goes.
Two problems here. First, just days ago, it was said that Saudi Arabia had abandoned any normalization talks with Israel, which was reported widely. Yet when the Saudi Crown Prince was asked about it, he said,
there were reports that you had suspended talks.
No, that's not true.
The Saudi Crown Prince, however, has said the issue of Palestine is of utmost importance.
For us, the Palestinian issue is very important. We need to solve that part.
Question is, how important? Is it a non-negotiable, or is it open for negotiations?
We have a good negotiation. Let's continue.
Now comes the Saudi foreign minister. To paraphrase his statement, peace that allows Palestinian people to have an independent state with Al-Quds as its capital. If that's the case, Israel-Saudi reconciliation is a non-starter. There's no way that neither the Israeli prime minister nor his far-right extreme fascist cabinet would agree to it. So what is the deal? Why is Saudi Arabia wasting time talking to Israel? How can Netanyahu say that he cares about the Palestinian cause, yet say this about their position?
But I also believe that we must not give the Palestinians a veto over new peace treaties with Arab states.
And while talking about the importance of Palestinians, his forces murdering Palestinians. Just today, two shot in the head, bulldozing their homes and detaining them. Is Saudi Arabia serious that it may reconcile with this apartheid regime?
Iran's intelligence ministry says it has thwarted a terrorist plot to set off 30 simultaneous explosions in the capital, Tehran. The ministry agents have arrested 28 terrorists in several operations in recent days. The terrorists were affiliated with Daesh. Some of them had been acting in cahoots with Takfiri elements in Syria. Some others were operating in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iraq's Kurdistan region before. According to the intelligence ministry, the terrorist modus operandi was, by far, more complex than the ones used by ordinary Takfiri groups. They used procedures similar to those employed by the Israeli regime. A considerable amount of explosives and bombs were also seized during the operation. Fuad Izadi is a lecturer at the University of Tehran. He says the Daesh terrorist group is doing the U.S. and Israel's bidding in Iran.
ISIS has been infiltrated for many years, and they are basically doing what the Israelis and Americans want, which is creating chaos in Iran, engaging in terrorism. You know, we had the anniversary of the sad passing away of Ms. Amini a few days ago. There were no, although all the Israeli paid opposition groups outside Iran called for rallies in Iran, no one showed up. So that was a major failure. In order to cover that failure and compensate for that failure, I think they were using ISIS to engage in terrorism in Iran. And one thing that the Iranian president said at the UN was that the assassination of General Soleimani was a gift to ISIS. Mm. So we see cooperation between enemies of Iran, whether they're Israelis, Americans, ISIS. The good news is that Iran's ability to basically stop this type of activities, as you have seen in today, is an indication that Iran continues to survive and progress with all the difficulties that some governments outside Iran are trying to create.
France says it has decided to recall its ambassador from Niger amid tensions between the two countries since the African country's new rulers took power back in July.
France has decided to bring back its ambassador, and so in the coming hours, our ambassador with several diplomats will return to France, and we're ending our military cooperation with the de facto authorities of Niger.
Macron also said French troops will withdraw from Niger in the months ahead, adding that a full pullout will take place by the end of the year. Niger's junta has welcomed Macron's announcement as a historic moment and a new step towards sovereignty. The junta said the withdrawal of French troops is in line with the determination of the Nigerian people. Niger's military rulers had told the French ambassador to leave following the coup that toppled the pro-France government of President Mohamed Bazoum. Since the military takeover, anti-French sentiments have been growing in the Sahel country, with protests being held against the presence of French troops there. Iraq says that it will replace the U.S. dollar with its national currency, the dinar, in all transactions inside of the country. The Central Bank of Iraq has announced the plan, which will come into effect next year. The governor of the bank said the currency provided to travelers is not subject to the decision. Ali Mohsen Al-Alak also said most business people have entered the official transfer channel of providing $1 at the price of around 1,300 Iraqi dinars. He added the measure has helped decrease inflation rate. Israeli drones have once again attacked eastern Gaza. This is the third day in a row that the regime has launched aerial aggression on the besieged strip. Our Gaza correspondent Ashraf Shannon gives us more details.
Israeli drones attacked two Hamas security posts in the east of the Gaza Strip, one in the east of the northern Gaza Strip town of Beth Hanun, and the other one east of the central Gaza Strip refugee camp of Al Braj. The drone attacks did not result in any injuries, but they caused massive damage to those locations that were hit. A similar situation happened yesterday in the east of Gaza, as well as Israeli drones attacked Gaza. The Israeli attacks come as the Israeli regime claims that they come in retaliation for the peaceful protests that were taking place on almost a daily basis for nearly 3 weeks now east of the enclave, as young Palestinians protest to demonstrate to slam the ongoing attacks and desecrations of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound by Israeli extremist settlers. This as settlers desecrated the Al-Aqsa Mosque today on the eve of the Yom Kippur holiday, or the Day of the Atonement, the Jewish holiday. Almost every year, as Jewish holidays take place, Israel increases its attacks against the Palestinians.
The first humanitarian aid convoy has arrived in the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh region days after a Russian brokered ceasefire deal ended Azerbaijan's lightning offensive. The International Committee of the Red Cross said 70 metric tons of food and aid had passed through the Lachin Corridor. That is the only highway connecting Armenia and the mountainous Nagorno-Karabakh region. Azerbaijan says the demilitarization of the ethnic Armenian separatists is underway as part of the ceasefire deal. The Nagorno-Karabakh region is internationally recognized as part of Azerbaijan, but is predominantly populated by some 120,000 ethnic Armenians who want independence from Baku. The leadership of the breakaway region says that they will leave for Armenia as they do not want to live as part of Azerbaijan and fear ethnic cleansing. Azerbaijan has denied any intentions to harm them. Tens of thousands of people have turned out across France to protest against systemic racism and police brutality. Clashes erupted between police and protesters, and several were arrested. Earlier in our news review program, we took a closer look at the issue of police violence in France. Thousands of demonstrators have gathered in Paris to protest against systemic racism and police brutality. The protest was also held in other cities across France. In Paris, demonstrators called for an end to what they described as the state violence. The protests also saw some clashes between demonstrators and police forces in what the French Interior Minister called unacceptable violence. The nationwide protest came almost 3 months after the point-blank killing of a youth by a policeman that sparked over a week of violent protests in Paris and elsewhere. Jonathan Ofeanza is a publisher at Africa Briefing who joins us from London. We also have Barry Grossman, who's an international lawyer, who joins us from Bali, Indonesia. Welcome to you both. Jonathan, I'll first start with you. Let's not forget, first of all, the way that this youth was killed. And that was, I don't know if you saw the video, but it's good to recall that he was shot at point-blank range, which some are calling that execution style. But aside from that, there was a lady in this soundbite that we just played that said that the people who are in power, the state as she referred to, don't even admit or recognize that there's a problem with the police force and racism. Isn't that the source, in some ways, the source of the problem?
That is a sort of the problem. Because, I mean, the state, you know, can put their head in the cloud as much as they like. But the fact is that the reality is that there is racism in France, and especially if you are a youth, non-white youth, you know, belonging to the majority, you are at risk. Look, there's this law that was passed, the Internal Security Code that was passed in 2017, Article 435-1, right, which authorizes the police to use for to shoot for not non-compliance. So if, say, you are driving in a car along the streets, a police asks you to stop, whatever, or ask you to get out of the car, and you refuse to, the police can shoot you. I mean, look, this cannot happen in what in the so-called civilized society. If it is not institutionalized racism, then I do not know what is. Look, the minority in France, you know, are so marginalized. There's high unemployment among the minority. They lack access to adequate housing and so on and so, and so, and so forth. So the people are very right, you know, in demonstrating to voice their concerns about the institutional racism going on in France.
Okay, Barry Grossman, it's no surprise that, I shouldn't say no surprise, but it is pretty evident that this characteristic that France has is actually reflected in other countries like the U.S. But just to throw out a piece of stat before I ask you a question, about half the men perceived as Arab or black, and this is important in the case of France, have been stopped for identity checks by the French police. That's half, compared to fewer than one in five white men. So the basic question is, why is such, I'm going to say, extreme racism from the police when it comes to, based on this stat, Arab or black men?
Well, look, I mean, this is not unique to France. Let's start with that as a premise, as a proposition. What we've seen throughout Atlantic world countries is a growing militarization of law enforcement forces combined with ever-increasing statutory authorization to engage in conduct which, but for the authorization, would be considered criminal. In the UK, for example, it runs right up to and including the justification of murder by the state security apparatus. So this isn't unique to France, but of course France has a somewhat unique history in that, you know, it's shown its intrinsic racism throughout the colonial period. And of course, racism, it's not something that stays in the field once people return home. France's treatment of people in Algeria and throughout Africa and Southeast Asia is very well known. And was very harsh and very much racism driven. Now, as we see more and more people migrating to Europe out of need, out of a prior association between their country as occupied by the French and modern France, we see more and more the law enforcement agencies in France coming into contact with them, law enforcement agencies which increasingly use ex-military personnel and extremist elements to deal with the population. We've also seen in Atlantic world countries this growing move towards authoritarianism and the use of police forces to control the population rather than to enforce the law of the land. And it's always going to impact disproportionately on people from minority backgrounds, even before you get into the racist tendencies of the individuals who are hired in the ranks of the police and other security forces.
Thank you very much for that, Barry Grossman, international lawyer. And Jonathan Ofe-Ansah, publisher at Africa Briefing. Thank you. And with that, we come to an end for this news review. Thanks for tuning in. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints. It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزای لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need, which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willst, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
Salam. I'm a nature enthusiast and traveler. In Close Up Iran, I introduce you to the wonders and beauties of my country, Iran. Stay with me. Why are you silent these days? Say hello. Hello. Let me give you a gift. Wait a minute. Here's some seeds for you. What? Why don't you eat?
Oh, you feel unhappy? Okay, I have a bigger gift for you. Well, I keep a parrot at home, which feels depressed when I make long trips. And I just decided to take it to the Bird's Garden of Tehran so that it feels free there and can live with other parrots. Bird's Garden is located in the northeast of the city, in the middle of Lavizan Forest. The garden is designed in a real natural condition and it is available for visitors. It is constructed in two phases in an area with 23 hectares of land. The first phase was constructed in 2013 and includes the birds that cannot fly. The second phase, which has a smaller area than the first phase, includes the birds that can fly. Different species of parrots, pigeons and doves, some species of bird of prey, and Iranian and African ostriches are some but not all the species that are kept in Bird's Garden in Tehran. Right now, more than 8,000 birds with 176 different species are kept in this garden. One of the unique features of the garden is the freedom of birds in the environment, meaning that about 90% of the birds are kept in a completely open space and in a cage-free environment. In the Tehran Bird's Garden, you can also walk alongside the birds and enjoy the beauty of these incredible creatures. The lakes and creeks flowing in this garden, as well as beautiful wooden bridges built over these rivers, have doubled their beauty. Well, we are in the Bird's Garden of Tehran now. By we, I mean my parrot and I. Here is an amazing green environment. And we feel really great in here. There is a wooden bridge which passes over a big pond. And here I walk on the bridge. Look at the white gooses. They are so cute. Listen, listen. The birds are free and happy. You know, this place is part of Lavizan Forest in Tehran, which has been designed and decorated perfectly. Actually, it's pleasant for both the birds and the visitors. And here I see a peacock. Oh, it's very beautiful. This part of the garden belongs to the birds of prey. Wow. Look at the eagle. It's awesome. And there is a falcon there. It's astonishing. As the area is wide, they feel free here and can fly freely. And what I was attracted to at the first sight was the eye-catching flora of the area. Various plants and flowers grow here. Wow. And listen to the music. I mean, the music of the nature. Pleasant. Very pleasant. As I had promised, I want to give my parrot a gift. Yes, I want to give it freedom. How? I will give it to the garden's staff so that after a week of being in quarantine, my parrot will join other parrots in this garden. Hey, baby, welcome to the paradise of birds. Now that I don't feel concerned about my parrot, I'm going to visit other birds in this garden. And let me add this point that the ceiling of this area is covered with very high cable nets, while the blue sky is completely visible. And you, my dear friends, come to Tehran and take a visit to this beautiful garden. Here is a paradise for both birds and humans.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Thank you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. The maximalist strategy of the Zionist lobby has seen the misnamed Anti-Defamation League, or ADL, finding itself in the crosshairs of the world's richest man. Elon Musk has rightly taken exception to ADL's accusation that he's an anti-Semite and their pressure campaign on companies to stop advertising on the social media platform known as X that he purchased in 2022. So in today's episode, we'll examine the implications of this quarrel, starting with Amina Taylor's report into ADL's rancid record prior to its spat with Elon Musk.
The billionaire owner of the social media website X, formerly known as Twitter, Elon Musk, is suing Israel lobby group and spy outfit, the Anti-Defamation League. Musk claims that the ADL has been lobbying companies to drop their advertising deals with X, alleging that Musk is an anti-Semite. According to Musk, this treacherous campaign has led to a significant drop in advertising revenue for the company. In an entertaining turn of events, a live conversation about the issue on the X website was disrupted by Vivian Berkovici,
a former Canadian ambassador to Israel. She was supporting the ADL viewpoint when she was asked by participant if she worked with the Israeli spy firm Black Cube.
Following this exposure, she quit the space and deactivated her account. Long before it targeted a billionaire military contractor like Musk, the ADL had been spying on and smearing all manner of leftist organizations. It was previously revealed that the ADL actually collected confidential information on around 10,000 political activists and spied on over 700 organizations across seven cities in the United States. Individuals the ADL spied on included Dr. Martin Luther King and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. The ADL was also found to have sold information on anti-apartheid activists to the boss agency of the apartheid regime. It is also well known that the ADL supplied the Israeli external agency Mossad with information it had gathered on Arab student groups in the United States. Interestingly, an FBI internal memo in 1969 stated suspicion that the ADL was violating the Foreign Agents Registration Act by spying for Israel. Despite this, the FBI has integrated with the ADL more and more over the years. The ADL is the largest non-governmental trainer of U.S. law enforcement, with every single FBI agent going through ADL training. The ADL has also employed the former FBI chief of the Domestic Terrorism Operations Section, Gregory Airy, as vice president for law enforcement and analysis. Airy spent a year living on the Ramat Rachel settlement in Al-Quds-occupied Palestine, learning Arabic for the FBI. So while military contractor Musk goes head-to-head with Israel lobby group, the Anti-Defamation League, it is important to remember not to interrupt when your enemies quarrel.
As always, we're joined by our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and he's now a non-resident senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch, and he's a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. Joining us from California once again is Miko Pelid, and I spoke to him earlier via Skype. Miko is an author, a broadcaster, and an outspoken advocate for Palestinian liberation. He hosts a regular blog, which aims to shine a light on the underreported experiences of the Palestinian people. His book, The General's Son, Journey of an Israeli in Palestine, is a powerful account of his life. And his book, Injustice, The Story of the Holy Land Foundation 5, covers the wrongful conviction and imprisonment of five Palestinian Americans in the US for sending food and medicine to orphans in Palestine. Welcome to the show. David, I wonder whether you could just say a word or two about this show's experience with the ADL.
Well, the ADL has noticed this show, which is, I suppose, a plaudit of some sort. And they were involved. We did a show on this some weeks ago. They were involved in co-publishing a report by the Centre for Countering Digital Hate, which is a British-based Zionist censorship group. And we were denounced by Greenblatt, the guy up there on Twitter, as being Jew haters and racists and the kind of language you would expect from them. So this is an organization which is dedicated to criticizing supporters of the Palestinians, and that's its main function these days. It didn't always do that, but that has become its main function. Sure. But it does other things too.
Yes, indeed. Well, I started by asking Miko if he'd had any run-ins with the ADL himself.
No, I have not. I can't really explain why, but the Zionist organizations don't bother me in any way, shape, or form. They don't interrupt with me. They don't interrupt my events. They don't have my events canceled. I am somehow immune to their to their folly. So they have not bothered me one way or the other. I mean, I have to say that the fact that they exist, and the fact that they are such a venomous, poisonous, toxic, I should say, influence on the discourse on Palestine is a problem for everyone. And it's a problem for the larger issue of Palestine, of course. The book behind me, Injustice, that I wrote about the Holy Land Foundation, the fall of the Holy Land Foundation, which was a crucially important and an honest relief organization, Muslim relief organization, the beginning of their fall was initiated by the ADL. And, you know, five very fine Palestinian Americans ended up in federal prison, two of them with sentences of 65 years. So their influence, their toxicity is everywhere. But for me personally, they have not interfered and with my work at all.
David, Amina there mentioned in her report, didn't she, that the ADL even spied on Greenpeace, for goodness sake. I mean, are there any other unexpected targets of ADL surveillance, do you think?
Well, you would expect from its propaganda and publicity that it would only focus on the far right, the organisations which are engaged in plotting against the Jews as a group. But of course, since its very beginning, it's not only done that. Way back in the 1940s, before the creation of Israel, FBI files show that it was spying on Arab American groups and reporting on them to the Haganah and to the forerunner of the Mossad. And in fact, they had people inside the ADL who turned out to be later Israeli intelligence agents. So there was that. And then by the time it comes to the 1990s, you have, yes, Greenpeace, the United Farm Workers Union, you have South African apartheid, anti-apartheid groups, a whole range of organizations are being spied upon by this organization. And they're actually engaged in providing that information to the FBI and collaborating very, very closely with the FBI, such that the FBI, you know, on occasion thought of them as being potentially too close to the Israeli government, but nevertheless, those relationships deepened.
Sure. Yeah, interesting. Well, I then asked Amiko whether he thought the ADL was a racist organisation in view of how it spied on and indeed smeared key figures in the black community in the United States.
The ADL is a racist organisation. There's no question about that. Its entire existence is to serve as an agent for the Zionist movement in the United States, and as a gatekeeper, if you will. And so they will do whatever it takes, to get the job done. They are a racist organization. They're an inherently a racist organization because they're a Zionist organization. They support terrorism. They support the murder of Palestinians. They support violence against anyone who does not agree with Israel. And of course, the example that you gave is a very good one. They will stop at nothing to serve their very narrow-minded racist agenda. There's no question it's a racist organization. There's no question that they support violence and bloodshed of innocent Palestinians and others, anybody who stands in their way or in the way of Israel. And they openly support Israel. They openly support Israeli acts of terrorism against Palestinians and elsewhere. They are the entire, you know, trumpet section, if you will, that supports the Zionist cause in America.
David, what can you tell us about this character, Roy Bullock?
So Bullock's a really interesting character. I mean, he has a really checkered history. He worked for the CIA in El Salvador. He was a self-styled art dealer. He worked as a confidential informant for the FBI. And he was also, for 30 years, an investigator for the ADL, and he compiled, this is where the figures come from, he compiled files on some 10,000 individuals, 900 organizations, all across the US. And this was the basis of the ADL spy ring, which was revealed in 1993. Of course, they have other investigators all across the country, none of whom were exposed. So the ADL spy ring was a huge scandal, but it only exposed a tiny part of the organization.
Indeed. Well, we'll just pause there for a moment, as we've got another report now about Elon Musk's curious connections with Israel and its apologists.
Elon Musk has a complex but generally positive relationship with Israel and its lobby groups. In order to purchase Twitter, Musk borrowed $1 billion from the largest recorded donor to the Israeli military, Larry Ellison. Ellison is so close to Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that he offered him the directorship of his tech company, Oracle. Elon Musk's ex will also collaborate with Authentix, an Israeli firm created by ex-Israeli intelligence officers. Authentix will handle the new ID verification, which requires users to submit official ID documents in selfies. Authentix is a branch of the Dutch security firm ICTS International, which was founded by former members of the Shin Bet intelligence agency. Musk and his Starlink satellites were also involved in the failed regime change campaign against the Islamic Republic of Iran. When U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken mentioned the importance of the U.S. government assisting writers in Iran, Musk directly tweeted back with the words, "Activating Starlink." Musk later boasted of contributing 100 active Starlinks in Iran to ease the communication of regime change writers. Musk is also collaborating with Israel against the resistance axis. Musk's company, SpaceX, recently launched spy satellites for an Israeli intelligence firm named ImageSat International to identify targets for airstrikes in Syria. Noam Sigal, the company's CEO, is a current reserve in the Israeli Air Force. Musk's collaborator, ImageSat International, has been key to Israel's over 1,000 airstrikes on the Syrian Arab Republic over the past half decade. Both ImageSat International and the Israeli embassy in the US went as far as publicly thanking Elon Musk on Twitter for the launch of their spy satellites over Syria. Musk is not an enemy of Israel.
David, what do you know about Elon Musk's partners for verification at X, this Authentix outfit?
Well, it's a company which will identify the blue ticks. You know, when you pay for the X or Twitter, as it was called, for blue ticks, and now they're going to have this identity authentication system, which is run by this Israeli company, which the parent of which was set up, as we saw there, by Israeli intelligence officers from the Shin Bet, which is the internal intelligence agency of Israel. So you've got, and of course they will be gathering data on this. And this is not the first time we've reported this kind of thing on this show. We've reported this time and time again. Companies which are engaged in the tech industry and can get access to ordinary people's data through the police or through the military or through the intelligence services. And in this case, they're able to do that. The data will be submitted, passports, selfies, and the access to this for the Israeli intelligence services will be there, presumably. One presumes that that's what it's for from their point of view. And of course, this is not something which is going to help most ordinary users of Twitter. In fact, it's going to be a deliberate and definite harm to ordinary users if it is used and or abused by Israel, which of course it's very likely that it will be.
By the way, David, tell us a bit about Vivian Berkovici and Black Cube.
So there was a Twitter space, or an X space, which is a meeting on Twitter, live meeting.
Yes,
quite often there are thousands of people on these things. Like that. And this particular one was hosted in the US, but with people from the UK as well involved in hosting it. And this woman comes on and she says, you know, we defending the ADL. Mm-hmm. And one of the participants says, but don't you work for the Israeli spy firm Black Cube?
Yes.
And she denied it. She said that she didn't.
Right.
Immediately after that, she came off the meeting, deactivated her Twitter account.
Wow.
So you couldn't find it anymore. But of course, she does work for Black Cube, and she denied it. And so it was clear that this is an Israeli intelligence-linked firm.
Right.
And they were sending people to Twitter spaces, to defend the ADL.
Wow.
And it really shows the way in which Israeli troll farms operate. You know, they send operatives, quite high operatives even, to humble Twitter spaces in order to defend the...
She was outed live on air.
Yeah. This is a really interesting example of the way in which these troll farms work, that the Israelis are into everything and making sure that they can try and push the agenda which they want to pursue.
Indeed. Well, I then asked Nico what he made of Elon Musk launching spy satellites for Israel over Syria.
Well, he's met with Erdogan, he's met with Netanyahu. I think he will meet with anybody that profits him, that helps him pursue his agenda. I mean, he's a highly motivated multimillionaire, and he wants to have influence, and he wants to rub shoulders with all these heads of state so they can have even more influence and more markets for his products. And so I don't believe he has convictions. He has ambitions, which is not the same thing. And he will meet, obviously, he met with Netanyahu. I mean, how much lower can you go?
David, what's Israel's role in the regime change efforts in Syria?
So, as viewers will recall, what happened in Syria was it appeared to be part of the Arab Spring, these uprisings against authoritarian regimes.
Yeah.
And it latterly became apparent that what was happening in Syria from 2011, very, very early on, was an armed insurrection supported by NATO, by NATO powers, in particular by the US and the UK. France was involved to some extent as well, but also Israel were involved. We know from the disclosures subsequently that the famous IDF field hospital in the Golan Heights, which Priti Patel, the UK minister, visited in one of her illegal meetings, which resulted in her having to resign from her
ministerial
post.
Theresa May was prime minister,
When she was there, she was talking about how we should not give aid to the Palestinian Authority, we should give it instead to Israel and its delightful field hospitals in the Golan Heights, which were helping people in a war situation. Of course, what was happening was that they were taking in people from Nusra and from other so-called moderate rebels supported by NATO, patching them up and sending them back to fight Assad.
Yeah.
And of course, since then, the Israelis have been systematically involved in over 1,000 different bombing raids on Damascus. And, I mean, truly awful stuff. And the international community should be putting its foot down and saying this has to stop forthwith.
Extraordinary. And of course, in the mainstream media, give it very little coverage, if any at all. Well, finally, I asked Miko for his assessment of Twitter, now known as X, since Elon Musk's takeover.
Well, I have to say, again, I haven't seen anything change based on my experience. I've never had any issues with Twitter at all. And I post, if anybody follows me on Twitter, and if they don't, I would hope they do. I don't hold back. I mean, I make my statements. I post anti-Zionist information all the time. I just posted an article and some thoughts about the Sabra and Shatila massacre in Lebanon in 1982 and how it was predicted and well planned and so on, and how the Zionists are, really have a license to kill wherever and whenever they want. So I personally have not experienced any issues with it at all. I know some people's accounts have been closed. I know that some people have had issues with things that they've posted that have disappeared and so on. But like I said, I have not had any of those issues. So based on my experience, I don't see any problem.
Well, that's all we've got time for today. So let me thank our guest, Miko Peled, and of course our resident expert, Professor David Miller. When it comes to exposing the diabolical tactics of the Israeli regime, Palestine Declassified goes where the corporate media fears to tread. Palestine Declassified will be back next week with more forensic investigations and analysis. So until then, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime has killed 6 Palestinians in occupied West Bank and Gaza. Raid on Jenin killed at least 4 Palestinians, with another Palestinian killed near the fence between Gaza and the occupied territories and another in Ariha. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. The Electronic Intifada wrote, a 19-year-old Palestinian man was fatally shot by Israeli regime forces recently when they raided Aghabat Jabar refugee camp. Israeli regime special forces raided the camp in Ariha in the occupied West Bank's Jordan Valley.